WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So now I'll have a brief call-in on the state of the Democratic campaign in Pennsylvania. There is all this talk the last few days about Obama's comment on small-town bitterness in tough times, and we'll read it in a second. But I'm always reluctant to build entire segments on the show too specifically around one comment or another that a candidate makes on the campaign trail. As some of you know, on recent shows in the past, during this campaign, I have mocked the idea of the campaign becoming about the campaign, which it has for the media in these recent weeks in too many cases on both sides. So we have Hillary Clinton caught in her lie or misremembrance or whatever it was about flying into Bosnia under sniper fire. We had the dust up over whether she was putting Obama below McCain in some of her speech references. And now we have Obama seeming to dismiss religion and gun ownership and maybe most interestingly opposition to free trade or trade as wrongheaded things to, quote, cling to. But Huffington Post and other sites this morning have been quick to post some similar things that Bill Clinton said campaigning in 1991. So with a grain of salt toward about anything that is happening right now on the campaign trail, other than just taking a big step back and asking who's going to be the best to do the really big things, we will compare these two pieces of text here. And you tell me, is this different and does this matter? And, of course, we have a comments page up for this. And as anything with Clinton and Obama, I'm sure you're going to let it rip on the comments page. But we will give first priority for this on the phones to anyone who perhaps comes from the kind of struggling small town that Obama was talking about and that we were just talking about with Stephen Greenhouse in his book, The Big Squeeze. Okay, so 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Our producer, Kate Hines, has generously agreed to be the voice in gender-neutral casting of both Bill Clinton and Barack Obama for the sake of this segment. Here is what Obama said in San Francisco last week.
But the truth is that our challenge is to get people persuaded that we can make progress when there's not evidence of that in their daily lives. You go into some of these small towns in Pennsylvania, and like a lot of small towns in the Midwest, the jobs have been gone now for 25 years and nothing's replaced them. And they fell through the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, and each successive administration has said that somehow these communities are going to regenerate, and they have not. So it's not surprising, then, that they get bitter, they cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations.
All right. So that was a longer version, because we like to try to put these things in a little more context, of what Obama said at that San Francisco event. And now in 1991, Bill Clinton said a few things that Obama supporters are now bringing to the fore and saying, oh, yeah, well, Clinton did it, too. So in the Los Angeles Times in September 1991, referring to then-President George H.W. Bush and the way he campaigned, Clinton said, the reason this tactic works so well now is that you have all these economically insecure white people who are scared to death. So that's one short quote. Then a couple of months later, Joe Klein, writing for the Sunday Times, reported that Clinton made these following remarks.
You know, he wants to divide us over race. I'm from the South. I understand this. This quota deal they're going to pull in the next election is the same old scam they've been pulling on us for decade after decade after decade. When their economic policies fail, when the country's coming apart rather than coming together, what do? They find the most economically insecure white men and scare the living daylights out of them. They know if they can keep us looking at each other across a racial divide, if I can look at Bobby Rush and think, Bobby wants my job, my promotion, then neither of us can look at George Bush and say, what happened to everybody's job? What happened to everybody's income? What have you done to our country?
Kate Hines, thank you very much for channeling Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. And so, listeners, I mean, what do you think? Are those two things equivalent? What does this mean to you? Is the Obama quote being willfully misinterpreted? Is the whole idea of these things on the campaign trail, Clinton's as well as Obama's, really made much too much of by the campaign press rather than the big issues of what they would do as president? And by the way, they do have a debate Wednesday night, and we'll be talking about it Thursday morning with extended excerpts back to policy, we hope. But maybe our reaction as citizens to all these things, the campaign becoming about the campaign, each of these little gaffes or whatever you want to call them, should be resist and ignore. But what do you think? I'm sure some of you think that the Clinton ones and the Obama ones are not equivalent to each other. So that, of course, is for you to say. Chris in Piscataway, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. I think they're both similar. I think there's a lot of truth in what they say. It might not be in the way I or somebody else may want to say, but what Obama says, I mean, if you take away the grammar he used, there's truth to what he's saying. You see? There's truth. The grammar is the problem. It's not what he's saying. The grammar is the problem. Whenever there's tragedy, whenever there's unemployment, people cling to guns, they cling to religion, they look for something. They look for, that's the reality of life.
So So you buy his statement that he just put a positive thought badly, that he's not dissing religion, he's not dissing gun ownership.
I mean, look at this. After 9/11, what happened? Every church was filled. What happened next? Everybody wanted blood for blood. That's what happened. Everybody ran for the gun, and everybody ran to church. That's what happened after tragedy. Whenever there is something goes wrong, unemployment, tragedy, either you run for the gun or you run to church. Everybody who's listening now, ask yourself, what did you do after 9/11? You either wanted blood or you went to church. That's what you did. I mean, it's all the grammar. The grammar is the problem. That's what he said. It's the truth. You know, I mean, he's not dissing the church. It's just what happens.
Chris, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And we'll get Richard in Manhattan next. Richard, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. I'm on the other side of the issue, but I'll grant you that the Clinton remarks and the Obama remarks are similar. And you can even toss in Howard Dean from 4 years ago and his comments about the rebel flag and getting those voters.
Oh, yeah, but the pickup truck riding, all of that stuff, right?
Right. But the problem, why the elitism critique is fair, is that the problem that President Clinton made, Dean made, and that Obama makes is that on its face, the comment deigns to say that one adult, to tell another adult that, hey, I can explain to you why you're voting the way you're voting, which goes against the rationale put forward by the voter themselves. The voters themselves know why they're voting. They're voting because those things are important to them in their culture, in their history. And for somebody else to come in and say, well, no, you're really just voting against your economic self-interest because you're being duped by somebody who's making these wedge issues take control of you, that's the elitism's part. And the other part that's factually wrong is that this isn't something unique to small towns. It's another kind of error that Democrats tend to make. The same sort of argument that he's making about, purportedly making about economic strife motivating voter behavior, well, that could apply to the urban areas as well. And in fact, he goes right to claiming that his history is a community activism. Well, that wasn't in a small town. That was in downtown Illinois, Chicago. So on its face, the comment is elitist because he's sitting there essentially telling folks, other adults, why they're voting the way they're voting and discounting by converse the rationale that they give for voting, which is because these things are important to them.
Richard, thank you very much. Marguerite in Brooklyn, an Obama supporter. Hi, Margaret.
Yes,
Marguerite.
Hello.
What are you thinking?
Well, I'm from that culture. It's a very particular northern Appalachian culture. I grew up in a coal mining town, and we have been depressed since about 1970, you know, at the deindustrialization and all. And although I'm an Obama supporter, when I heard that quote, I just felt I can't support him any longer because he was attacking my family, my culture, which he does not understand. He obviously doesn't.
Do you feel he was attacking or trying to, perhaps not in the most artful language, express sympathy for the plight?
I think he was talking to a sophisticated, urbane, well-educated San Francisco crowd, and he was careless with his words. He may have sympathy for the kind of economic distress and people clinging to these anchors and so forth that he mentions. But certainly, at the very least, his language was unfortunate. And I think it will hurt him because it will be pulled out of context. I mean, instead of saying bitter, which is a mean word, he could have said disillusioned, discouraged, even angry. But bitter has, I don't know, it's got a terrible quality to it. And I don't think he understands that culture at all.
Marguerite, thank you for your call. And Peter in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Brian. I kind of find the truth in everything that everybody's saying. I think essentially the underlying tacit assumption in what Obama said is that people have motives and attitudes that come about for reasons that they're not always conscious of. Now, maybe that's elitist, but that's also true. And I think, you know, Hillary Clinton, and I think she's well aware of this, and her critique is purely political. I'm sure if she weren't running for anything, she'd agree with Obama. Says when she says that he's out of touch with people, I think the problem is that people are out of touch with themselves, and Obama is raising something that gets dismissed as elitist, because it's very hard.
Well, you heard our last caller who said she has been an Obama supporter but is now actually questioning that because she, coming from Appalachia originally, felt like he so misunderstood what her people were all about.
Well,
and you're saying she
may misunderstand
her own self or her own culture.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of attitudes and beliefs that come from screwy places. They're not necessarily because of the most... that I sat down and have an objective discussion with myself and researched it on Google. But it is really putting people on the spot. I don't know whether American people are at that level where they can accept, why do we have these attitudes? Nicholas Kristof made an interesting point, I think, yesterday in his column. He talked about how lynching went up back, last century during recessions.
Right. Interesting comparison. Peter, thank you. We'll take one more who's originally from sort of around there, from South Delaware, Cheryl, now in Staten Island. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Thanks for putting me on.
Sure.
I think my impression of it is that what Obama was actually doing was trying to explain to those who are more elite why some people vote and hold the beliefs that they do. And I come from, you know, my hometown still has less than 1,000 people. And what you find out is that these people, and I come from that too, have a need to feel connected. You need to feel like you belong to something. And when you lose
everybody has that.
Right. But when you live in an area that is, you know, sort of economically depressed, and you're in an area that doesn't have a lot of cultural connection, then you have very few choices of things to, quote-unquote, cling to. And one of the few things that you have that you can go to would be a church group. The other are, you know, your local neighborhood hunters. And so what happens is you sort of make that your society, and you need to feel like you belong to things. And when you have that sort of that mindset, then sometimes you do tend to vote against your own interest. And there was this, I remember this headline, how can, 50 million people be so stupid from when Bush was reelected? I think what Obama is trying to say is this is not stupid. You need to understand how these people feel. And this is why sometimes they may not seem to be voting in their best interest. And these are the people we need to help. This is why people vote this way.
Well, that's by way of political analysis, what he's going to have to try to convince people that he really did mean, because it's being interpreted, perhaps willfully misinterpreted, but nonetheless discussed as if it was accusing them of being ignorant bumpkins, right?
No, for all of this,
that he was speaking to a what was supposed to be a closed meeting of supporters in San Francisco, and then out this statement comes.
Right, and these people out in San Francisco are probably some of the very same people, and I hear the same thing now that I'm living here in New York, is how can people think that way? How can they vote that way? And Obama's saying, this is why people can think this way. This is why they do think this way. This is what the government has done to them, and this is part of the reason why they may eventually feel bitter. He didn't say everybody was bitter. He just said, you can understand if they've been living in this for this long and been promised so many things, and these promises are never followed through on, sure, they become frustrated. And if you're frustrated long enough, some people are going to become bitter.
Cheryl, thanks for your call. Thanks to all of you who called on this. I said it was going to be a brief call-in, so we got some points of view on there, and you can go talk to each other on our comments page all day about this Barack Obama thing at 212 at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And when we continue on the radio in a minute, it'll be about people who secretly love meetings. Stay with us.